Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, whatever your insurance needs are, they'll take care of it. Right insurance, best price. And they'll search for the best price. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we are in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Proud to be in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors here, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, Eagles fans, cover your ears. West Durham with the call of the game winner last night at the Dome.
Three on the play clock, two, one, snap to Ryan. Here comes Philly. Quick throw. This is Julio Jones. 45, 40, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Atlanta. Holy goodness smokes.
What a great call by either Matt Ryan or Dirk Cutter or both.
And Wes Durham with the call on the Falcons radio network. You know how far back I go with Wes? When he was the play-by-play voice of Marshall. I ran to Wes when he was the play-by-play guy at Marshall. Then again when he was the play-by-play voice at Vanderbilt. And then the play-by-play voice at Georgia Tech. So I ran into him a lot over the years. And he is just a terrific guy. You know, his father, of course, his late father was legendary. Woody Durham at North Carolina. You know how good Wes is? Wes has carved out his own legacy to the point where people forget that his dad was Woody Durham. That tells you a lot about Wes. And his father would have been. And I met his father a few times along the way. Father's an awesome guy. Class as class gets. But his father was extremely proud of Wes. And should be. All right. More Penn State football talk in a moment. Let's talk about the Eagles game last night and the loss to Atlanta. Now 1-1 in the season. There are certain factions in Eagles Nation that are now completely convinced they'll never win another game again. Ever. With that, we bring in Matt Leon from Philadelphia. Hello, Matt.
Good to be with you.
How long can Carson Wentz survive taking some of the shots he took last night?
I'll tell you what, that was a very, very physical game, especially for week two. And to answer your question, I don't know. And that was kind of the thing I came away, aside from all the injuries and the loss and everything, you just kind of looked at how he got hit and kept coming back and kept getting up and kept putting his head in there, kept putting his nose in there to make plays. That would be a concern, is just, is that going to be, you know, how long can he maintain this before something happens?
Yeah, and that's because I'll give McCown credit. I thought McCown, in the brief time he was in the game, I thought played decently. I mean, he did fine. He looked like, you know, what a backup quarterback should be. I've got enough here to kind of, you know, bridge the gap for a while.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's a pro. I mean, yeah. And that's what – it's going to be interesting because Nate Sudfeld getting close, the backup quarterback, to he's been practicing on a limited basis last week. And it'll be interesting to see how they approach it because they obviously like Sudfeld to come into the year with him as the number two. But I would think he kind of get used pretty quickly to having a security blanket like McCown, someone who's started a long time in this league and has played a lot of football. It's suddenly probably nice to have that to lean back on. So yeah. Aside from a lot of other things to keep an eye on, that is something to low-key watch here over the next couple of weeks.
Boy, they went at Darby last night. What did you see? I mean, Darby had the one pick, but he also gave up, I want to say he gave up 10, 11 receptions last night, something like that. What are they seeing as to why they're going at him, in your opinion?
I think it also had a lot to do with, boy, did they blitz a lot more last night than they usually do.
And that puts you in coverage, yeah.
And I think that was – it was kind of a cascade effect of all the injuries on offense. I think the defense, Jim Schwartz specifically, the coordinator, kind of figured, you know, given especially the first three quarters when the offense just really struggled to get anything going, I think he kind of figured that the way they were going to win that game was to make plays defensively, short field, maybe even score on defense. And you just saw them blitz a whole heck of a lot more. And I don't mean just like a guy here, a guy there. I mean, they were zero blitzing a lot last night, probably more than I've ever seen them with Jim Schwartz. And they got results. They got a big sack from Sendejo. They made some plays. They forced some hurry throws. But what ended up being the game-winning touchdown on that 4th-and-3 came on an all-out blitz, where the Falcons executed that little pass out to Julio Jones to perfection and turned into a long touchdown. So to get back to your question to Darby, is there a little bit of concern? Yes. I honestly think, though, that was more of a situation where he's trying to cover one of the best wide receivers on the planet, and yes, in some cases a very good wide receiver in Calvin Ridley, and they're sending everybody at the quarterback trying to make a play. So I think I need a little bigger sample size before I'm really worried.
Right. That's very fair. Now let's get to Fletcher Cox. Fletcher Cox, if he's not firing on all cylinders, is better than most players still. Is he firing on all cylinders?
I don't think he's all the way back, but I think he's getting closer. And frankly, they need him, you know, as much as they can, because with Malik Jackson out and now Tim Jernigan, it sounds like, even though Doug Peterson didn't have an official update, reports that he's going to be out a month. So all of a sudden, a position that looked like an embarrassment of riches when he came to depth has become Fletcher Cox and a couple of backups. So they're going to need him to continue to heal, or I should say not so much heal as to get back into his high-level self, but I think he'll be fine.
Is Jason Peters, in your opinion, still the best option at left tackle?
I think when he's out there, I do. I think the problem is, you know, he came back into the game, but he's just, you know, there's so much tread on the tires with him. He's been such a warrior for so long. I think it's just a concern of how much longer does he have. And I know they've got Andre Dillard in the wings, but I think you squeeze as much out of a future Hall of Famer like him as you can. And I think they had some troubles on the offensive line. I don't necessarily know how many of them I would attribute to Peters. There was a lot of leaks along there. Isaac Seumalo, for one, one of the guard spots, really, really struggled basically in every aspect. So I think, you know, we talk about the big plays they allowed. We talk about the offensive line. They couldn't run the ball. They were inconsistent, the injuries. And you put all that together in a pot, and you figure that they ended up losing on the road to a pretty good team by 4 and had the ball at the 8-yard line when they, you know, when their drive ended. They're going to be okay. I know there's a lot of panic around here, you know, all hands on deck that they may never win again. But I think they're going to be fine.
They'll win again Sunday. So they also were facing a team. Let's admittedly, it was a desperate team coming off a bad performance. That, you know, coming home. I mean, the Falcons played like a team that, you know, like, we only have to prove it to the fans. We got to prove it to ourselves. And I thought the Falcons played that way.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And even that being said, I didn't think it wasn't an A game from the Falcons. Matt Ryan had 3 interceptions.
Yeah.
They really allowed the Eagles with their, you know, second, third, fifth passing options, allowed them to still go up and down the field in the fourth quarter. The Falcons have issues, but the win is the thing. But I think there are a lot of scenarios last night where you could have found ways for the Eagles to win that game. I mean, specifically, if that 2-point conversion isn't overturned on that silly replay call, then all of a sudden they only need a field goal at the end. It just changes the whole thing.
Oh, believe me, I know.
I just, you know, the NFL, and it's becoming more in professional sports, because I think Major League Baseball is guilty of this, too.
Yeah.
It is just amazing how they tie themselves in knots to not see what is right in front of them. I understand the spirit of the rule. They want to protect quarterbacks, because some guys try to get the extra yard and stuff like that. But at one point, does anybody in that referee huddle, anybody on that headset, just common sense say, well, he's not giving himself up, he's trying to score, right? So it's good. Like, I don't think the Falcons would argue that at all, honestly. I mean, there'd be, but it's just silliness. And it's not why they lost, but it does, taking those 2 points off the board, it does change the dynamic of how the fourth quarter ends.
Well, there's also that Rams-Saints thing, the 87-yard return for a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, again, you just sit there and go, who's in charge of this?
Well, I just think everybody is worried, and this comes back to, the NFL has this history of making silly calls, and then rather than just admitting a mistake or, you know, moving forward from it, they twist themselves in knots to prove they were right. And, yeah, you know, I go back to the Tuck rule, right? You know, back in that Raiders-Patriots game. It's all of a sudden, you know, that they rule that that it's not a fumble or whatever, and act like that had always been the rule, and then we spend the next 10 years with those silly calls. Look at the same thing with, you know, how all of a sudden they take a touchdown away from Charles Johnson on opening day because they say he didn't have the catch all the way. Yeah. And look what that opens the doors to for the next 6 years. You know, it's just amazing to me that no one has the sense to just kind of put some nuance to it and say, yes, this is what the rule says, but this is an obvious situation where a guy is never going to be giving himself up in that situation. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Well, see, that's what I always said about the Deflategate deal. Right? How many officials handle the ball on every play? Three?
Yeah.
Three? So, like, you didn't notice it the entire half?
Right? Exactly.
Because Indianapolis has its footballs. You didn't say, boy, this feels a little bit different. There's three guys handling every play. I always felt the Deflategate thing was them kind of like, well, we didn't really check. You know, and I thought it would cover it up for the officials.
No, I think the NFL's got a lot of serious problems like that makes it a bad product, I think.
Yes.
And I know we're getting off on a rant here, but I feel like a lot of the NFL success and popularity is fueled by fantasy football and by gambling. I think if you took it on the merits of the product, it's but it has such a following because so many people will watch for their fantasy football team or whatever bets they've got laid and stuff like that, that it, I don't want to say props up, but it inflates how popular the actual sport is and allows them to kind of roll past some of these giant problems they have in the structural integrity of the officiating, of the game flow and the gameplay and stuff like that. But nobody asked me, so.
I just did in a roundabout way. hey, Penn's got Delaware down in, Newark this week. What kind of, because Delaware's ranked 20th. What's that matchup like?
It's going to be an uphill climb. I mean, this will be game four for Delaware, and it's the opener for Penn. Yeah. So that's tough under any circumstances.
Yeah.
Obviously, Delaware in the CAA, it's kind of the upper echelon. You're talking scholarships and stuff and such at the FCS level. Something I think Penn will have going for it is that there is no tape on Penn, so you've got a little bit of an element of surprise. Penn's going to be good in addition. And also, you know, Delaware played a good game this past Saturday, but they played North Dakota State, and they got kind of rolled. You might get them on a little bit of a downturn, you know, depending on how they are physically and mentally after losing a game like that. It's going to be an uphill climb, but you know, this is always something, these Ivy League teams, it's I don't want to say unfair because it's just how the schedule is, but when you're starting playing your opener and a team's getting ready to kick off for game four, they've already gotten all those first game jitters out of the way. They've gotten all those early season question marks out of the way, and now they're just kind of into their routine, whereas you're starting fresh. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Matt, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time very much, sir.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
Matt Leon from Philadelphia. We'll come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Yeah, you look at Saturday's game, and I understand. Look, a lot of fans not only wanted Penn State to win, they wanted to win big. Well, they didn't win big, but they won. And now that, so there, I mean, there is a bottom line. I do get concerned sometimes that, and I realize that winning big brings with it a feeling of dominance. How about that? So I do understand that. But at the same time, sometimes I wonder today if we're not doing enough. If we're not doing enough to, where winning's not good enough anymore. Have we gone so much with the style points? And look, I understand where people want to see perfection out of their team. They want to feel like they're getting better every week. And I understand that part completely. But they shut a team out in the second half. They got a clutch drive at the end of the first half to tie the game. They got a big drive in the third quarter to put themselves in front. Now, could they have done more to expand that lead? Of course they could have. There's no getting around it. And I think that's what's frustrating some people. You wanted, and I understand that that dominance that you want to see. Plus, it was the last game with Pitt. But a lot of this is perception. A lot of this is perception. And the reason I say a lot of it is perception is simple. If they played if you took the exact duplicate of Saturday's game and put Auburn's name there, which is what the name that will be there in 2 years, you'd be thrilled beyond words. But the perception is that nationally is that Pitt is not one of the awesome and incredible top 25 programs in the country. They aren't. That's because they aren't. Yeah, when you look at what they've done so far, let's go to the Virginia game. Pitt led the game at halftime. Virginia beat them with a good second half. But you know what the average length of scoring drive for Virginia was against Pitt that day? 25 yards. Now, does Pitt have a great, awesome, and incredible defense? No, I wouldn't go that far. I think Twyman's really good. 97, the defensive tackle. And I think that the secondary is what I thought they'd be. I thought they'd be very good, and they are. They're very good. I also think that Penn State, there's still some area of growth. Now, part of growth is how disciplined a game do you play? Well, Penn State played a really disciplined game. You know, Pitt tried to get chippy. Penn State did not retaliate. Penn State did not commit penalties in the game. You know, it was a pass interference call that was legit and one that was not. But Penn, you know, and then the play and the punt. I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to penalize a guy for that kind of effort. Not in the least. So Penn State didn't commit penalties. Penn State did not commit turnovers. Penn State did not open the door by giving gifts that allow another team to win. They didn't do that. When you're not committing penalties and you're not committing turnovers, you're making the other team earn everything they can get. And they totally shut down the run game. They made Pitt one-dimensional. Kenny Pickett, to his credit, played a really good game. It's no getting around. Kenny Pickett played a really good game. But almost all those pass plays were underneath coverage. And on the drive where they get the ball downfield, you know, let's give credit where credit's due. Taysier Mack made two incredible catches on that drive. The one on the sideline was a great play by him. Torrey Castro Fields couldn't have been in a better position. All I know is that you've got a series of areas to correct right now, but you're correcting them from a position of strength. You're correcting them from a position of being 3-0. That makes a big difference. You're not sitting there. Let's just take Pitt's situation, for example. It's not as if Pitt's played poorly in any one of their three games, but Pat Narduzzi now is trying to make corrections from a position of being 1-2. James Franklin's making corrections from a position of being 3-0. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 and Hummel's Wharf. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. They're the best in the business. Maybe you want a bundle. They have all sorts of ways to save you money, and they will search out as far as they can to save you money. And if there's ever a claim, they go to work as if it happened to them, because customer service is everything at Purdy Insurance. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Ben Roethlisberger is out for the season. He'll undergo elbow surgery. So he is done for the year. And Drew Brees is out a minimum of 6 weeks. So it's and last night's Eagles game against the Falcons had a lot of injuries in it. Wow. The boatload on both sides. All right. Any questions or comments? We're more than happy to take your calls. Maybe something you saw in the Penn State Pitt game. Maybe something I said that you're not quite on board with. Whatever it may be. Okay, let's go to Dick in Milton. How are you doing today, Dick?
I'm fine, Steve. Hey, I have kind of a question. We've gone through Idaho and Buffalo and now Pittsburgh, and I was kind of curious if you've assessed any of the rest of the Big Ten teams. Is there anything surprising about any of them or disappointing, or do you think everything shaked out the way you it was preseason prognostications?
Everything's pretty close, Dick, to where I thought it would be in the Big Ten. I thought looking at the Big Ten, Penn State's got Maryland next. I thought Jackson would make a difference at quarterback. He's a veteran. He knows how to play. I've always liked McFarland and Leak, the two running backs anyway. So I think Maryland's played about what I thought they would do. I was not that surprised they lost to Temple on Saturday. Then they've got Purdue. A lot of it revolves around Moore, the wide receiver. Sindelar's a really good quarterback there, but they've had a couple of big losses on defense. Bailey being out, Neal being out. That hasn't helped them at all. So I wasn't surprised they lost to TCU. Iowa is about what I thought they would be. I think the quarterback Stanley's very good. Their wide receivers are good, not great. The running backs are good, not great. Their defense is good, not great. But it was enough to win at Iowa State, and because they kept their mistakes to a minimum. Michigan State, I thought Michigan State would be terrific on defense, and I thought it would be a struggle for them on offense. And so far they've been terrific on defense, and it's been a struggle for them on offense. Michigan is about what I thought they'd be, too. I thought they'd be okay on defense, but I was never sold. I've not been sold on them offensively for a while anyway. And I think with this new system, Charbonnet got a lot of credit for gaining 100 yards, but he did it on 33 carries, Dick. That's only 3 yards a carry. Let's see. Then the bye week, then it's Minnesota. Minnesota's not played a good schedule, and they're 3-0, and they barely survived in the three. Quarterback is okay. The running backs are really good. Johnson, the wideout's really good, but the quarterback, Morgan, is okay. Indiana has some skilled players. They always have. Problem is Indiana's never been great in the trenches, and that really showed up against Ohio State. Then Penn State's got Ohio State, and I'll give Ohio State credit. They're not only winning, they're blowing people out. I thought they had a chance to be really good. I still am not totally convinced about Ohio State on the offensive line. I am always been convinced about them on the defensive line. That's a big-time defensive line, and Chase Young is a major, major league player. Fields, to his credit, has been really, really good. But I thought that Fields' presence would make J.K. Dobbins a better player because Haskins is so stationary in the pocket. And that didn't help Dobbins. And splitting carries with Weber didn't help Dobbins. Now Dobbins is the full-time guy with a guy that can run, which now makes Dobbins even more effective. And I don't really know what to say about Rutgers, Dick. I have no words.
So basically, things have kind of shaped up the way you kind of saw it. I mean, obviously, you could always have a surprise. Somebody could be extremely better than they were predicted, and somebody might not. With an injury or two, somebody could be worse. That's just the way it is.
You're absolutely right, Dick. It's just in the small sample size we have at the quarter poll. So at the quarter poll, teams are so far been about what I thought they would be.
Okay. So, well, I appreciate it. I mean, I actually have. I've kept up somewhat. I don't pay much attention to who Purdue's playing on a given week, or maybe Indiana, or even Iowa. But
oh yeah, no, I understand.
There's enough stuff going on around here that I don't have to worry. But it basically shapes up about the way you thought, and it's pretty much the way it is year after year after year. The cream's always at the top, and everybody else is. It's usually Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State and Penn State right behind them somewhere or close right there or with them someday, some year or so.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I had a talk with Tim Brando, who I think is one of the best in the business. And Tim's a big believer in Nebraska. And I told Tim, I said, look, I'm a big believer in Adrian Martinez, the quarterback. I think he's terrific. There's a couple other guys they have in that offense are really good. I said, but I'm not quite on board with Nebraska's defense yet. And so far, that's been their problem. It's been their defense. Now, is that a young team that will get better and better with time? Yeah, I think so. I think Nebraska is another team like Penn State where the talent level line has risen up for them, but their experience line, especially on the defensive side, hasn't met up with that yet.
I guess we'll see what happens down the road. I should say Penn State, I think the 3 weeks really does not have any. I don't think they lost anybody major through an injury yet, have they? I mean, obviously, they've been pretty healthy for these first three games.
Right, except Daniel George got hurt, and Daniel George did not play on Saturday against against Pitt, but you know, the door's open to him coming back. So,
okay. Well, okay. I appreciate the analysis anyhow, so we'll see what happens. They don't have to replace a quarterback like Pittsburgh Steelers or maybe New Orleans Saints do anyhow.
Wow. How about that? That's a boy. In a league that's already, to its credit, a mess, they're a bigger mess today.
He's out for the season, according to what I read. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, Roethlisberger's out for the year, so.
And I'm not sure about Breeze. I said, we'll see, six weeks maybe.
Yeah, Breeze is 6 weeks. Now, the Roethlisberger thing is interesting because they're in a position which is 180 of the Giants. The Giants, there's some talk, do you play Daniel Jones? Do you put Eli Manning on the bench? Okay. Steelers now get an opportunity to see if this guy can be their quarterback of the future. And they don't have to do it in such a way where they're taking the veteran and moving him to the side. The veteran got hurt, so now through necessity, you're going to find out. So you got to take it for the positive. Let's find out whether this guy is the future or not once it's time to move on for Ben Roethlisberger. He may show you that he is, and that's a positive. He may show you he's not, and that tells you you have to draft one. But I think it gives them at least an opportunity now to find out through necessity instead of hard decision as to whether he should be playing or not.
Do they have another veteran quarterback behind him? Sometimes they have like a 38-year-old veteran sitting there because he's 38 years old.
And
I don't know what they have back in third string.
Sean, I don't think they have anybody back because they dealt Josh Dobbs. I don't think they have a third guy that's a veteran, right?
Yeah, the number three quarterback was on the practice squad, and actually Jerry Dulac earlier today tweeted out that the Steelers will be looking for a backup quarterback. As to who they will look for and who's available and who will take the gig, we'll have to wait and see.
Dick, this may be your moment.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, yeah, but sometimes I think a couple years ago, I thought the Steelers had, like, the third-string guy ended up playing quite a bit. I mean, this is maybe more years ago than I'm thinking about. But
you think of Charlie Batch, maybe.
Yeah, Charlie Batch years ago. Yeah. Charlie Batch had the step in years ago, and he was the consummate veteran, who I think when they went to Baltimore and he won a game for them as a third-string quarterback.
Well, there's a reason some guys are third string and they're 38 years old or 37 years old and they're sitting back there getting a paycheck a little bit and they're not playing much. They're just there for...
Hey, look at McCown last night. McCown technically is the third guy, but Sudfeld's hurt. Sudfeld's about to come back. But McCown's 38, walked out there, hit a couple passes, looked good. Hey, now, if you need him long term, you're sunk. But short term, the dude can play.
Well, I hope they do okay. They're 0-2, obviously, and that's not good. Now they're going to play San Francisco and with a new quarterback. We'll see what happens because I live here among a lot of Steelers fans, and they'll be grumbling. That's nothing to tell you.
They'll be grumbling
if it turns out to be a really lousy year.
You know, but this is what I find interesting, though. I think it is, in the end, you can turn it into a positive. You now are going to find out whether this guy is going to be your future quarterback after Ben Roethlisberger, or you may find out that he's not and you need to draft somebody. So you got to take the positive out of it.
Well, the Eagles went through it a couple of years ago, or last year, or two. They went through it, but the second string guy, and he was pretty good. So we'll see what happens. All right. Good talking to you. So far, 3-0. Right. Let's move on.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I already sat down and prepped Maryland yesterday, as a matter of fact.
I got you. We'll see you, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, Sean. Dick.
Thanks,
appreciate it.
Bye.
Thanks, Dick.
All right. Now. Yeah, that's...
Devlin Hodges, your current backup quarterback for the Steelers out of Samford. So...
Wow.
I know. Not long ago was the number four quarterback on the depth chart. Moved up quickly in the past. Moved up quickly in the last 2 weeks.
Talk about a rising star. Wow. It's like suddenly becoming interim finance director.
quickly flying up the ranks.
Oh, well. Who, Devlin, what's his name again?
Devlin Hodges.
Boy, it just doesn't give you that Terry Bradshaw feeling, does it?
No, no. And we got Ken from Milton wanted to talk about Saturday's game, too.
Ken, how you doing today? Great to have you with us.
Fine. Thanks, fellas, for taking my call.
It's great to hear you.
Before I go any further, let me first say that I do not think that I know more about college football than the coaches who were hired up at Penn State and are running the Chiefs. So I do have a question.
Sure.
Well, I myself have never been a big fan of running back by committee. I do understand they have a situation up there that's a little new. Not new, but different in the fact that you still have an offensive line you're trying to feel out. You have a bevy of quality young kids to carry the football. In your experience and in your knowledge of the team right now, is the running back by committee thing something that Coach Franklin would like to continue throughout the season, or is he favoring that hopefully one will emerge and possibly become that running back? And secondly, do you feel that the more liberal transfer rules might have anything to affect with keeping kids getting reps and keeping them in the game and, for lack of a better term, keeping them happy, so that's not something they have to worry about? I'm going to go ahead and hang up and let you guys finish the show.
All right. Thanks so much. Appreciate that. Let's start with point number two, because I think you bring up, in a modern college football world, a very interesting point. When you're talking about players of similar to equal talent, I think at some point, as much as you're factoring in the moment, I think you make a really, really good point that you also had to factor in long term, where suddenly a guy is sitting there and he's not playing and he's talented, but, do you get concerned that they might enter into the transfer portal? I think you have to think about that with a lot of guys these days. And yeah, the running back position is one of them, where they've got a redshirt sophomore, a true sophomore, and two true freshmen as the running backs right now. So I don't know as if you want to coach that way, idealistically, but it is a very interesting point that is very worthy of conversation, because there is some level of merit to it in today's world. All right. So now the running back thing. I think in the end, as time goes, if one person can somehow separate themselves from the pack, or two can separate themselves from the pack, and maybe they're different style of guys, and that can only be done through performance, that can only be done through your performance equaling trust, where you emerge as the guys that end up being the ones that carry the ball the most. James Franklin obviously has never been afraid to go with one running back. Saquon Barkley was the one running back for 3 years. Yeah, there's a little bit with Lynch and a little split with Sanders. And Sanders primarily was the running back all last season. So his ability, his MO to go with a guy as your running back has never been his issue. I think right now he's got four guys that are all really close, that are going to have to show that, A, they're good running backs, but, B, they also have to show they're good in the pass game, and they have to show that they're also good in terms of pass protection. So at some point, you would think that somebody will start, or maybe a couple guys will start to separate a bit, but I can tell you right now, even through practice, there's no separation. But I do also think that your second point about the transfer portal is something that cannot be dismissed. I think if somebody were, I think dismissing that would be a mistake. Because I think every coach in college football right now, and every coach in college basketball right now, has to at least sit down and say, hey, let's take a couple things into account here, especially when you have guys of comparable talent. All right, we'll take a break. It's good questions. And Dick had a good question, too. Appreciate the questions very much. Come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070. WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. All right, great to have you with us on the show today.
Yeah, wrapping it up for today. So Big Ben's out. So you had no Bell. Your guy Bell is playing tonight. Your guy Antonio's played yesterday, and your guy Ben's out.
God, that was a tough day yesterday. My quarterback, BR7, gone for the year, and then a couple hours later finding out the lead singer of the Cars died in New York yesterday. That was a tough day yesterday. It was a tough weekend for people that love music. Eddie Money passing away last Friday, and Rick Ocasek yesterday, so people that love the 70s and 80s music grew up in that time frame, you know, time in high school and college. That's been a rough couple days. My music heroes are fading away. Quarterbacks are dropping. I mean, you know what? Ben and Drew and, you know, Luck retiring before the season starts, and Pat Shermer's, you know, who knows if Eli's going to start week three.
You know what?
It's been crazy here the last few days.
I thought 5 or 6 years ago this league was indestructible. I really did. Financially rolling in the whole deal. You know what? They got big problems.
We haven't even talked about the pass interference call that got reversed yesterday in the Steelers game. We didn't even get to that. The first thing I thought of was your take back in the spring, all the way back in the spring, about how terrible of a decision that is to start to, you know, use replay on pass interference calls. We can get to that tomorrow, or ask Neil Kuhl on that when we have him on next.
Well, yeah, and yesterday there was that Rams-Saints game, an 87-yard fumble return for a touchdown. Oh, that was blown dead. Like, guys, okay? People are looking at you right now, and guess what? Your integrity level is not great as a league. They don't handle side issues very well or competently. The officiating on the field is a worry. You know, somebody asked about the officiating in the Penn State game on Saturday. Some of those calls were really good calls. Like, some people complained about the fourth down catch by Mack over the middle. That was an excellent call. It was the right spot. That was excellent. That was spotted right. Pass interference on the Pitt touchdown drive. He tripped over his own 2 feet. You know, unless they've suddenly put in a clumsy ox rule I don't know about. I mean, the guy that threw the flag was the guy that, in my opinion, could not see the play. A lot of people were upset about certain calls in that game. Some of them were actually called correctly, but there are a couple that were incorrect. And my problem on that play was that the official on the sideline, who cannot see the play and cannot see the feet, thought he saw it. And officials should never do what they think happened. They can only call what they see.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.